I'm Ron Bechet. I'm a visual artist and teacher in New Orleans.
I'm Rosemary Reyes. I am an organizer, writer, living in New Orleans on my way to New York.
I'm Diane Jones Allen. I'm a landscape architect and a painter.
And this is table number 5.
I feel like last time, I feel like people just like flipped one over and then answered it, but I wanted to see all the questions. Like, I really was like, what if there's a better question we're not answering? You know? If there's anyone that like speaks to people.
We shuffle the decks, so.
We have one more person at the table.
Yeah.
My name's Dante. Dante Hoshun's the name I go by. I'm a DJ, sound producer, writer, organizer.
Good. I wonder, is this deck different?
What?
I think so.
They also have pretty good questions. I don't know.
We should do this like round robin, just like pick them randomly.
Responsibility affect formal decisions made in your school? I would say yeah. I mean, I feel like it doesn't guide everything that I do. I feel like it always is. I feel like everyone has an audience and has something that they would like to share with that audience. And I feel like that always does kind of stem from some sense of like what you as a person would like to add to, help with, give to society in some sort of way, big or small. So I think there is definitely like some sort of sense of civic responsibility that goes into stuff that I make and stuff that I do like that.
I wonder if like what I have an example I'm thinking of right now. I wonder if it makes sense with this question, but I'm a videographer. I make videos, so I don't know about like my studio. I was making a video for a woman who runs an art space, so for an arts organization, to apply for this grant called Art Place America. I don't know if any of you are familiar, but it's like, you know, a pretty substantial amount of money you could ask for through this grant. And through my filming, I filmed like this duo, these two rappers, young rappers, in the neighborhood, like the Upper Ninth Ward. And they were a part of the video, like making the ask for the grant, saying like, we do work in the community, we bring people, our space is open to people in this community. We want it to be like a multidisciplinary space. And so I wanted to make like a second video just of their performance so that they could have it as like young artists who wouldn't have access to video production services. But she was with me as I was like looking at the visuals, and she wanted the video to be titled like their names, artists in residence at the art space, right? And it felt very much like self-interested and like, here is this like really amazing artists doing work in our space, and like, but here's a way in which I'm like using them to promote my space and not necessarily like thinking of their interests, like what's in their best interest. So anyways, so I retitled it. I felt like I couldn't just, it's a very small thing, but for me, like I wanted to make them look bigger than they were, and to just like, you know, say like they're the name of their record label, that's a production, their record label's production, like this is who they are. Because I feel like, I don't know, that's like a little way that I can help somebody that wouldn't have access, right? But that's like what her mission is like to give people access that they wouldn't necessarily have, and still like, as a white woman, maybe not thinking about some of those things practically speaking. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I'm a landscape architect, so which is, you know, design.
Yeah.
And that's what I actually do for a living. I have a firm. I paint kind of on the side, I guess. But as a landscape architect, a lot of what we do is in the public realm.
Yeah.
And there are examples when you have to fight to get community input, to get community engagement on projects. You have to fight the city or you have to fight the clients, you know, and that's always, and sometimes I've walked away from jobs from that. I mean, or I was kind of disappointed because there wasn't enough of that. Like, I just worked on a study about a year ago for taking down the Claiborne Court, the bridge.
Yeah.
And there was a real lack of community engagement, and that is really gonna affect, I mean, people were surprised that some of the community don't want that bridge down. It's ruined the community already, but they feel once it comes down, there'll be all this gentrification.
Right.
So, and you have to fight with the, you know, because lots of times they have in mind what they want to do, and so they don't want the engagement, or it's just for show. And so you really, you know, have to strongly, if you really care, because these kind of public projects affect people in the long run. Whatever they do, whether they take that bridge up or leave it down, is going to affect Treme, it's going to affect that community. And so it's really important as designers to kind of fight so that the voice of people are kind of heard in these projects. And another project we're about to work on is Hayden Plaza, which is on Aretha Castle Haley. And it's really interesting because that's an example where the artist kind of got caught in not like doing this. Frank Hayden, he's a sculptor, African American, he died, but he did, if you go up on Aretha Castle Haley, you'll see this kind of, it looks like an egg with hands. Have you seen that sculpture? Okay, and it was done, that's Martin Luther King, and so that was called Martin Luther King Plaza. And actually it's interesting because the first African American, well, one of the first African-American architecture firms did that plaza, and they hired the sculptor. And it was supposed to be, people thought it was going to be a statue of Martin Luther King, but instead he did this kind of egg with hands, kind of representing, you know, his, kind of his vision of what Martin Luther King meant. And kind of like because there wasn't community input, I mean, you could look at the records and it shows that when he pulled the, you might know about this, when they unveiled it, there was like all this uproar. And that was because, you know, and I feel the artist was kind of treated unfairly in the community because there wasn't this community engagement process. So all that is to say is that I do feel, especially if you do art in the public realm, you know, if you're a sculptor or if you're a landscape architect or an architect or a muralist and you're doing stuff in the public realm, you kind of have this obligation to engage the community. And lots of times you have clients that don't want you to engage the community because they just want to do what they want to do. So I have walked away or fought, you know, yeah.
Have you seen any good examples of like times where like a project has like the right amount of people leading it, like being open to what the community wants and the community kind of wanting, having like a good amount of say in it, like they're kind of finding this middle ground? I feel like I've seen a lot of projects happen. I've lived in St. Rock for a while, and there's a lot of more about like St. Rock Market, of course, and it's still going on. And I'm pretty sure they did all the things on paper to make it seem like they were like having meetings and that they were engaging the community. But obviously, well, I'm saying obviously, that's my opinion.
Yeah, it's true.
Obviously, it seems like they kind of missed some of the what the public sentiment was.
Yeah.
But for them, they could like dot their I and cross their T and check them off and like pretend as if like, oh, we did everything like they reported to them. So I see a lot of that. I see a lot of memes. I see a lot of things and a lot of people being able to like kind of pat themselves on the back. Like we have like upheld our civic responsibility. Like, have you seen it kind of work in a good way? Or like,
there are a lot of examples, not just in New Orleans and across the country, when there's really good outreach, when actually it's what we kind of call, we make up this term in my office where we call mining the indigenous, meaning that when you kind of look to the artists or landscape architects or people that are in the community when the client says, I'm going to get someone, you know, who actually, instead of bringing somebody from outside, not that a person from outside, I mean, I always have this, not that someone of a different culture or from a different community can't design for that community, but it kind of works best even when you collaborate with artists that are from that community, you know, to really help shape because they have a better connection. And they also know better, you know, they can use better engagement techniques. You know, because they're, like you said, they're these kind of canned things they do. Oh, we pin up something and have people put stickies or, you know, and it's just kind of, I check off the list, I had community engagement. As opposed to when you use people of the community that kind of know the best way, because people of different cultures are comfortable, you know, expressing. A lot of times people will come, especially African Americans, I've seen it, they'll come to meetings, they won't say a thing. And it's because they're turned off. The engagement, you know, isn't. So if you kind of get someone, you know, get the community to kind of shape the engagement, there you go, then it's usually best. And lots of times if you can get the designer or the artist to be of the community or collaborate, you know, in the process, you usually get better work.
Rosemary, this question, that question made me think about, so we're both events curators, we throw events, artistic events, parties, and stuff like that. It just made me think of the process of like trying to create that stuff,
yeah,
and the challenges, especially because both of us are transplants. Like, I've been here a year and a half, you've been here.
Same amount.
Yeah. And so there's like the challenge of wanting to like offer something different, but also wanting to like engage local artists, local sounds, local DJs, and like trying to balance that. Also trying to make sure you're in a venue that's accessible, that people of color feel safe in. I think that it's like a juggling act sometimes of like trying to like hold yourself responsible and like while at the same time be like, oh, I just wanted to be fun. You're like, but I also feel like I have all these responsibilities to the community, to the artistic community.
And yeah, and as a transplant, I found that there was a great amount of resistance from the very community that you're trying to, you know, develop a better environment for, or create a space for, because of I'm not from here. So that was like it was doubly challenging to navigate all of that on top of trying to organize something that was, there was a clear need for it without coming with some kind of, I don't know, a problematic stance on the role you're playing in the community that you may or may not be as familiar with. So yeah, I think that's a really good point. And you know, also as a writer, I think civic responsibility is constantly on my mind. And, I was working for an organization here where I felt like, an art organization, where I felt like there wasn't enough, you know, attention to civic responsibility. And so I also decided not to work there anymore because of that, because it's, you know, especially at a place like New Orleans, because of its history, because of the cyclical violence that this land has experienced and the people of this land have experienced, it has to be on the top of the list. There's no other way to put it, I think. But that's, you know, that's how I view it.
And I also think, you know, as a creative person, especially in, you know, doing something like architecture or landscape architecture or public art, as a creative person, as any kind of, you know, artist, you know, it kind of comes from within, like the form making kind of comes, you know, it comes from, I mean, there's things that inspire you from outside, but anyway, so it's like you creating this, but sometimes I feel like I've discovered that if I open up and I use this collaborative process and listen to, you know, the community, sometimes it really affects my form making in kind of surprising ways. Things that I didn't really think of, you know. It kind of inspires you in different ways because, you know, they have this other knowledge which can really affect your form making if you were just doing it, you know, from yourself. And especially too, like one big thing in landscape architecture, in architecture we talk about is sustainability. That's like the big thing. And you know, to me, you know, sustainability is not just environmental, but it's cultural and economic. And part of sustainability is, you know, the thing of will something last, right? So like even if I'm doing a mural or a piece of sculpture, you know, will it last if it sits in the community? And to me, the way you make things that are in a public environment last, if you can make people stewards of it, right? Like, I'm going to take care of this piece of art, right? And the reason I'm going to take care of a piece of it, because either it reflects me, or I connect to it, or I was part of building it, you know? So, you know, I think that just has far-reaching, you know, implications, even in terms of form making, you know?
Yeah, sense of value. And, you know, as an artist, I think, reflects the time. You know, what's happening in time. It's difficult to see how their work withstand the test of time. You know, if you're not dealing with what's going on, there's a, you know, so I think it's really important. It's this idea of understanding responsibility. That's just one of them, civic responsibility. Also to responsibility to
I'm always interested, like, to hear all the other things that people are doing here, because I feel like there's so many different projects.
This is interesting. This one about post black. I don't think we're post black. They kept talking about that in terms with Obama, but
I also have a question.
Says black as a historical phenomenon. Post black is a forward-looking agenda where you see yourself in 10 years. Where are we going collectively?
Well, I could just say last night, unfortunately, I spent too much time watching MSNBC and the riots with Trump, which lets you know that we are not post-black or post-racial divide. You know, we are not. So, and unless that's in some other kind of way, I don't know. But anyway, go ahead.
I would definitely agree with that. I feel like if anything, this like political season has like caused me to see that like America is still very much the America that it was in the 1600s and 1700s. And, like, there's still these roots that have thought had kind of been eradicated, that have kind of been there for a long time. But I will say that I really do think that we're in a post-black world as it relates to blackness being like one thing. Like, I hate when I'm hearing things on the news where like, oh yeah, Bernie Sanders needs to get the black vote, and like Hillary Clinton needs to get the black vote. Like, there's no like one black vote. Like, I put different thoughts on money, economics, reproductive rights, whatever. Like, it's like we have lots of different perspectives, lots of different minds. But that doesn't mean we can't be like still a very supportive and cohesive and like love-filled group, even if there is a plethora of different ideas and backgrounds within it. But I don't think it's, I hate when we're kind of reduced to like one thing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, because I think that, you know, the idea of blackness is more expanded, it's more expansive than that. And then I also think it comes to letting other people, like, that's one of the problem issues I do think that we do have, is like we kind of let the greater community define who we are and what blackness is, and we kind of have to stop doing that and be more expansive about who we are. I don't think we're post-black. I think we're really a more expanded sense of blackness, and we have to kind of really make that definition for ourselves. But, you know, just I think, you know, in terms of the historical perspective, I just think the problem with America is, and it's hard, it's just like which I think, like, for instance, Germany finally did, if you kind of want to compare slavery with the Holocaust, they kind of finally accounted for it. You know, they actually gave reparations to Jews. They kind of accounted for the for it. And so they were, I just think that America has never come to grips with slavery. And I just think once that happens, we can kind of move on. But until we're willing to do that, it's going to continue to be there. I just don't think we want to come to grips with our history. I think that's why there's foolishness going on about statues, okay, to get back to art.
Right.
Coming down. It's because we just don't want to, don't either know how to or don't want to deal with it.
Yeah,
one way to, yes.
Yeah.
And we either deal with it by, like, with Donald Trump is doing, making the other, like saying, okay, this is the real America and they are the others. But until we deal with our history in some kind of concrete way, where like other countries had to do, and I look at Germany as an example, not that they still don't have issues, but they kind of made, had to really come to grips with what they did. And I think it's made them a better country than we are because we never come to grips with it.
Yeah.
That Germany was made by other countries to deal with. We don't have that.
It's also
not just an American issue
with that pressure.
You know, remember the Pope at the time did it with Africa, divided up Africa, and said, you know, okay, this particular country gets this part of Africa. So it's always been the pressure. African people have been disenfranchised by European, by other people that aren't African for many, many thousands of years. And so I think, you know, we can't get past that. And I think you're right. You know, one of the things for me that's really interesting and something to look at is now they've found a connection genetically to how oppression, people who are oppressed, can be passed through generations.
Their DNA, yeah.
Through their DNA.
And causes trauma that manifests itself.
So
yeah.
Traumatic experiences is passed on. And so when you think about that, and we haven't dealt with that trauma, then we're dooming generations in front of us. You know, if we don't deal with this now. And so how can we get past that? You know, so this idea of post-black, I can't be past or post myself. You know?
Right.
So that's for me, it's just, you know, when we had the post-black art movement, you know, post-black artists, and, you know, and Thelma Golden was, you know, pushing this issue as an ism. I just felt like that. It's like, how can I get past this when folks won't let me get past that?
Right.
And what is wrong with embracing your blackness and still being accepted as a citizen, you know? And let somebody embrace their whiteness or their Jewishness or their biracialness, whatever. What's wrong? Why do I, you know, why can't we be what we are? You know, that always, you know.
I think for black artists, it's so tricky. I mean, this... So I don't know if anybody had a really entertaining Black History Month, but mine was. Like with the Super Bowl, with Kendrick Lamar, just like all these things. Like all these black artists making like very visible, loud statements about their blackness. The last year has been interesting about the identity of blackness, like Rachel Dolezal.
Oh, I love her.
All those. or even Zoe Saldana playing Nina right now. You know, like I think that there's this, that's part of, and having Obama as a president has kind of sparked all of these conversations about racial identity and artistic expression and who gets to do what. I'm just kind of nervous about what happens when he leaves. Like, I'm like, will the momentum still be here, right? Like,
But I think.
I mean, Black Twitter will still be here, but.
But I think what's happening. I think what's happening with the Trump supporters is actually related to that.
Oh yeah,
I think
no,
that's
they're
why
totally
they're in
related.
Such an uproar.
Oh yeah, they're totally
related. Because there's all those things you mentioned, you know.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's this perceived lack of the loss of something that like America was and always is. I think it really ties into like these things you're talking about. Like I personally don't see post, like anyone who's talking about post-black or post-race as like this idea that race does not exist or that like everything's gonna melt into one thing and then we'll be like cognizant of race or ethnicity or culture. Like that's just complete.
And do we want it? Do we want that to be? We want a very palette.
Yeah, culture and difference.
You know,
and like,
do we want
who you are
the
down to like every specific thing is like so beautiful and
beautiful. Yes.
Like, why would you ever want to go to the party? But I think to like, how, I don't know how great culture can be, you know, and I feel like that does scare people who have seen their culture be the dominant culture for so long. It's like we're no longer, like these things that used to be like number one are no longer number one, and it does cause people to hearken for something like, that will bring that back, which is scary because everyone can just embrace good wherever it manifests itself. That was like one of the more troubling things about the Obama presidency. It's like, like he's your president too, but like, why don't you enjoy this? Like, he really doesn't want to reach across like to whatever like 49% did not vote for him. Like, he among any person was the person who's like, even though you didn't vote for me, like, I'm still willing to like serve you guys. You know, instead of what we have now, like other politicians who could care less about the people who don't vote for them. It just doesn't make any sense at all. I'm kind of rambling.
You know, it's funny. I like that you brought that up, the issue of power. And the fear of losing power, you know, is, I think, with manifesting itself as we see what's going on with the phenomenon of Donald Trump. Yeah, it makes no sense. But I think we see it with the bombings. You know,
yeah.
What's going on with that here in this city? It's a manifestation of people who have power feeling that they're going to lose it. And they feel threatened.
I also think there's also this fear that, you know, because as human beings, for some reason, especially as Americans, we think of things, and it's something I fight with all the time personally, we think of things through our own experiences and perspectives. That's just how we do it, you know. It's always hard to put yourself in other shoes. So I really think that the fear that the majority who are not really, I mean, when you combine the Hispanic, the Asian, and the Black population, they're really, look at the numbers, they're really not the majority anymore. I think their fear is that the people that are now in the majority will treat them the way they treated the minority, because they see things through their eyes. So they're not seeing that, oh, now we'll all appreciate. They're thinking, just like we suppress the people of color, now the people of color are going to suppress us because they see things through their eyes. I think that's the greatest fear. They think they'll be discriminated and then suppressed because they'll be the minority, because they see things the way they did. You know, and they have no understanding of, you know, people of color. That's probably not what we're going to do, because that's really not the way we are. But yes, they're afraid.
People respond to him, like, we think that is, like, characteristics of, like, being a bully, being uninformed, or being just being, like, racist, like, a bad thing.
They love that.
They don't know why they love it, but they love it. They don't know that that's because that's who they are as well.
Yes.
I think they also love him because he represents capitalist America, like, and just like wealth and power and what people want out of, like, they want America to be able to bully other countries. So if there's a bully on the stage, like, giving a speech and has a huge empire behind him, like, wealth he's accumulated through the capitalist system, gone bankrupt a couple times or not.
Whether it exists or not,
yeah. That's very seductive, I feel.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That explains
all this. Oh, my God. It's like a joke. It's like a joke about Donald Trump. If he wins the presidency, he said, well, the joke is that, well, he's used to throwing black people out of houses, right? So.
Here's that Beyonce question. Somebody
oh, my God.
Beyonce.
Houston, yeah.
Yeah, we talked about this actually. This was the same. This was in the last day, first round. And well, a couple things, right? So she wasn't actually here to film all of that stuff. Like, it's like outtakes from somebody else's documentary. So that's one thing.
Which is a beautiful documentary. It's really good.
And like, I talked about just. initially being excited to see New Orleans represented. It was a question of like, how's New Orleans represented in the black, or how's blackness represented in the media, and sort of to see New Orleans represented in mainstream media. I was excited initially, and then I rewatched with a friend. I saw it once, and just initially, like, my reaction was like, great, New Orleans, like, I can see, but it looks like from other places. But the second time around with a friend, it was just like, who's an artist? Who was like looking for something more radical. Like, I was like, wow, what's considered radical to like mainstream America is so, it's actually like fluff. Like,
yeah. I feel like a lot of artists, I mean, I have, whatever, I have my own opinion about Beyonce, but there's, there's a lot of like taking blackness a la carte and like taking what's convenient and like, That video was that to me. When I saw it, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, the thing she does at the Super Bowl, I mean, being the age I am, I know people that were in the Panthers who are quite, you know, the Panthers are a beret, and a, you know what I mean? To like, take those, that thing a la carte, and all of a sudden, okay, so I'm representing, you know? Like, what does she really know? Does she really care about them? Does she understand the struggle they went through and those that are now in their 60s and 70s, what they're dealing with? And to take that, I love that, to just take pieces, and you know? So,
I think it's also, like, part of her identity is, like, a mainstream pop artist. Like, she's not Angela Davis to me, you know? I'm not expecting Beyonce to do that, you know? I'm like, you're a mainstream pop artist, like, you know, I represent your lane as like a lot of money and being like someone who can reach a large audience, but I still respect like certain efforts to like connect to blackness, stand up for blackness, like proudly proclaim that even though it like hurts your pocketbook or cops boycott you, like that stuff I'm kind of here for. And as like a Houstonian and a Creole person, I'm kind of, part of me wants to like really be into it, but there's some really problematic shit with that video. That's my challenge, is it's just like really, really problematic, like traumatic, like just knowing people who survived, like I'm like, I can't.
Or just those images are so triggering for people still, and for her to be glamour, like glamour shot on top of a cop car and OPD, it's ridiculous. As like, you know, one of her fans actually could have been very, very like traumatized from just rewatching that image. Without warning, I don't know. So there is like a lack of sensitivity in using such a tragedy and such a clear example of like, you know, just this, again, the cyclical thing that the cyclical monster that devours black bodies on this land for the sake of entertainment.
And I feel like that's a very New Orleans thing to eat blackness. Come here to eat blackness, black food, black culture.
Yeah. That's a rich history. Go back to lynchings, right? Taking pieces of the body. It's still there. But I guess I would ask, is Beyonce this generation's, what's that? Supremes?
She's totally Diana Ross. Totally, 100%.
Because, I mean, she has us, she's probably so happy because she did that, like what she did at the Super Bowl in the video. We're talking about her. She probably sold 50 more albums and, you know, 500,000 more albums or whatever, you know? But it's like, you know, does she really care? And does she really
take
the responsibility?
She's not even coming here on her tour.
Yeah, does she really take the responsibility for what she's done? Yeah.
What do you think about this? I'm talking about Beyonce.
She's so crossover.
And she really doesn't ever have anyone challenging her to kind of trouble her very like simplistic ideas of like what is art. You know, so when she does make the video, she's like, oh, we're gonna make this like rough video, like we have this director, they're throwing all these images out, we're gonna film this, we're gonna film this. And there's never that moment of like, oh, did we cross this line? Is this like tasteful? Is this even good? Is this interesting? Because for the most part, in her ear, it's just like, oh, this is great, this is great, this is great. And I just wish we kind of had a larger ability to hold our pop stars to like a higher standard, like a larger scale. Yeah, I see it in like this. something that's almost good. It's like, wow, it's a beautiful thing. But we're just so happy to see, like, a black thing, like, the MoMA, that it's just, like, we don't want to challenge it to be just a little bit more thoughtful. So I kind of see that role.
Well, one person that really, you know, I always get people upset, and I have fights about this with people. One person that I feel is like that, that I don't think a lot of it's good, and it's Spike Lee. I really hate that When the Levees Broke is a terrible film. And the second one was even worse. It was done really quickly, and the levees didn't break. The flood walls burst, you know? And he did it really quickly. The second one was really horrible. But he did that really quickly. And then Chirac was like a mess.
Horrible.
It was a mess. And it was because he did it too fast. He had a really great movie there. The sensitive thing, you know, with and her, where her family was actually killed in Chicago, the singer. Jennifer Hudson, and then the thing about the gun. But then instead, he puts naked girls, and he just puts everything in the world and every video technique he knows. It just was a mess. So he drives me crazy, because I think that, his ego is just, he wants to just do it all, and some of this stuff is crap.
Why did you think When the Levees Broke was terrible?
Because it was done really quickly. It didn't really deal like with the real issues of what really happened. The second one kind of glorified Make It Right, which is horrible. Those people have mortgages. Half of the people that were living there aren't the ones back. They're in worship. Brad Pitt did not help them. He actually harmed them, you know. And he glorified that. That was the second film. The first film, he didn't take time to really understand. Katrina was complicated. You know, and so it was just like, I'm Spike Lee, I'm gonna hurry up and make my money off of this and come down and throw this stuff together. You know, and the second one was even worse. You know, Katrina was complicated. You at least waited a year to really do your research, talk to people, come, but he's Spike Lee. Yes, he's Spike Lee, can hurry up and throw this stuff together, and that's what it looked like. If you go back and look at it now, you'll say, oh my God, all this is misinformation, this is not what was really happening here, this is not what really was about, this is not, you know, it's bad.
I was wondering, like, from an outsider's perspective, like, I watched that film, and it took a long time to watch it, because it's like, it was in four parts, like a couple CDs, you know? And I didn't see anything wrong. As somebody who was not here to experience it, like, he had governors, mayors, like, in his film, and I felt like it was very fortunate of him to be able to talk to those people, because they were right in the center of it all. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious about, like, if there's one moment that you remember from it that you feel like, from an outsider's perspective, you would take it like at face value, but from somebody that knows a little bit more about the inside politics of New Orleans, you feel like it's missing.
I mean, I really think he didn't deal with, and I just think he didn't have time. Like, some of the best things on New Orleans, all of a sudden in the 10th anniversary, there was about four or five books that came out. They had like 10 years. So he didn't really he didn't really deal with the fact that, you know, Road Home basically stole people's houses. And right now there's a suit, because there's a difference in people who are wealthier and could come back and put their kids in private school and take their money and build their house, and somebody else who only got $75,000, and your kids in Mississippi, our recovery school district closed down the schools, fired all the black teachers. All those things are not covered in there. Yes, he had those people who was so soon and very reactionary. And there was a whole lot of stuff that really happened. And then he went back and did a second film, and it was even worse. It was even shallower. The second one is really bad. And the first one, yes, but it didn't really deal. And I think part of it is because he's Spike Lee. He could come down and get governors and people to talk to him really quickly. But if you have been here, even if you've been here just in the last 5 or 10 years, you can really see what really happened. And a lot of those issues are not, we have more clarity about the terrible things that happened in Katrina and the aftermath of them. I mean, right down in the lower Ninth Ward, there were 18,000 people. 6,000 people live in the lower Ninth Ward. And Nora basically took, and rode home, all those 700 lots, which they now are putting out RFPs for developers. I mean, there's just meaty stuff that happened. And Spike Lee missed it in that film. Because unless he's just trying to make a quick film, which it seemed like, and get this reaction about Katrina now, where he really could have done some good, really made something. If he had taken at least 5 years or 2 years or made a film that really dealt with the real issues of displacement, how all these, the tearing down of public housing here and all those people now being pushed out New Orleans East, you know, where it used to be the black middle class haven and now it's the Section 8 voucher haven. You know, he didn't deal with any of that stuff.
Or school system.
Yeah, this has a lot of meaty stuff he didn't deal with.
How many teachers were fired?
And
then, you know, it's just like glorifying some of the issues in education and the system that, you know, just obviously the backfire. And so, I mean, those are some of the issues.
Yes.
But one of the things, too, that I guess I find fascinating to talk about is with Spike Lee and Beyonce, is this over sexualization of women. Mm. You know, I don't know how ladies feel about that. But, you know, it's like they're playing, you know, it's like this is what they're using to. There's no reason for this kind of thing. You know, you can see that there was a point to be made, but Beyonce, you know, I guess in a, I don't look at this stuff a whole lot, but I've never seen her wear an outfit that wasn't, you know, plastered on or a painted on. It's, you know, it's just over the top, you know, and it's used to for another reason other than being able to draw attention to the issues that she's trying to deal with and talk about. There are. And the most obvious thing that anybody sees is the sexual aspects, the sexual aspects of black women.
Well, in the way like her beauty is described or perceived, it's, you know, she's a black Barbie, so a Barbie is white, and so her beauty, the standard for beauty is still a white standard for beauty. Even though she may be black, that's not what people are seeing, you know, so that's a big part of it, I think.
I feel like also, when I think about somebody like Beyonce, the stakes are so much higher for her and for what she represents. Because there's only so many representations of black female beauty in the media. So like, you have Beyonce, Rihanna, and Nicki Minaj, and all three of them are really overly sexualized. And the problem there's a pull to criticize them for that because like, we only have a few people that are representing us in the media. Whereas like you, there's so much diversity of whiteness in the media because there's so many other representations of it. So that you can have somebody who's like, I don't know, who's like an overly sexualized white woman like in the media. Like, and it doesn't really matter, the stakes are so much lower because there's so many other examples of whiteness. You know?
That is the part where we do put so much burden on them. Like I hold the Spike Lee to a high standard, like what you're saying. But then it's like, where's the other Katrina documentary? Like no one else has really made it. Like, so we're kind of relying on these people to make these things.
To carry everything.
And there should be like Katrina's one of the biggest events in American history in the last 20 years. And there's maybe one mainstream documentary about it. Like, that's insane. Like, there's been like 20 about the financial crisis.
Right. And movies and plays about that shit.
Yeah, movies, fictional things, like whatever. And then, like what you were saying about there being these like two or three black women that are like held to carry and represent all of black women. Like, there's so many black women who do not look at Beyonce or Rihanna or Nicki Minaj and see themselves at all, you know, but they're meant to kind of represent all of them. So it is kind of a lot to put on them because they're all like in their 20s or younger. Smarter than we think, in that they've learned capitalism, they've been told that this works, and they've been told that if they don't do it, the next person is like right behind them and trying to do it. And it's like, do you, as an artist, it's always like, do you not like go hand in hand.
Yeah. I think about Josephine Baker. And
have you seen the quick reference? Have you seen the picture of Beyonce? She referenced that in like a performance of "Wore Like a Banana" to the skirt.
No,
this is like earlier on in the her career, like when she first went solo.
Wow. So she's conscious of
that's yeah.
Someone, yeah.
Somebody was.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
She's well curated.
Yeah.
Simone.
How do you equate Miss Simone and, you know, like Josephine Baker? It looks like today all we have is Josephine Baker, which is like Sharon. And Nina Simone, the one who's civically connected, who's trying to make a difference in saying something positive about black people, especially black women.
Well, I think that you do have the other. It's just that the other doesn't get the backing, the
radio
okay.
Play.
So, because I was having this, you know, I was having a big fit about the fact that they picked Zoe Saldana, and I'm like, okay, even if we're gonna say we gotta have a name, or maybe they wanted to have, you know, it was about her talent. But I was saying, you know, I remember seeing 12 Years a Slave, and not in a PETA. But the other young girl, the one that kept crying, do you remember that? I can't think of that actor. She was in Piranha also. She would have been, yes, she would have been a great Nina Simone. I could think of, and if you wanted an older person, the one that was in The Help. Not the one that won the Academy Award. She has a TV show. Yes. I mean, I could think of 100. Yeah. I could think of, like, India Irie. You know, India Irie. I could think of a lot of people that are singers, that are have the color, that have the weight. And it wasn't just the color. Yes, have the weight of it. Because I just saw the documentary they did. You know, there's a documentary. If you look at that documentary, it's like, what were they thinking? And some said, well, they wanted a name. I'm like, but they're, you know, so it's really about, there are those people like that there, but they don't get chosen. They don't get the avenue. I mean, that's what Viola Davis has said several times when she got the award, that she shouldn't, you know, there's a zillion other actresses, yeah, but they don't get the opportunity.
The sad part is there's so many layers to this, in that, like, if you start at the top layer of, like, what movies is Hollywood producing? There may be, like, two or three that even have, like, a black story in them. And then you go back further beyond that. It's like, why are there only two or three? Like, there are only this many writers, da da da. And then you go back, oh, yeah, there were, like, who are the historical figures that would even, like, garner a movie? And that's because a lot of our historical figures have been written out of history even before that, like 50 years before. So they're all these, like, layers. And then it goes, like, I feel bad for Zoe Saldana. I'm sure, like, as a working black actress, she's like, hell yeah, I'm going to do this.
She wanted the work.
I'm like, I'm doing
this. She wanted the work.
And now, like, Black America's mad at her. Like,
yes.
White America's like, we just need some So it's just like, she's like, oh, my God. Like, I have to, like, so if there were five movies about, like, amazing black women coming out in 2016 or 17, like, no one would care. Like, I'm pretty sure there are plenty of, like, biopics about, like, white people who the person doesn't look exactly like that person, and they don't care. It's like, who cares? And then we can have another one next week. Like, that's amazing.
I feel like there's also, like, a lot of more of, like, claiming ownership over the image of the black person, or, you know, over, yeah, like, a white person, because there's, you know, dime a dozen, like, but, like, yeah, so that's another thing that complicates it. It's like, well, yeah, actually, at the end of the day, who can claim this, like, artist's image, like, you know? Is it public? Can the public, or is it, you know, just the black community? Is it just her family? You know, it's like, who has ownership, and, like, why out of nowhere all these people have a stake in it? You know.
Let's not talk about sales. Retail. Just this discussion. Just bringing back to the visual form. What about Kara Walker Sugarman?
I'm kind of in love with Kara. I think she's, like, one of my favorite artists. I didn't get to see that collection, but I'm
in love with everything. I volunteered in the space for weeks, and so I spent a lot of time with that work and saw a lot of people's reactions. And I mean, I love her work, yeah. I think she's a genius. But it did feel like she was kind of playing a joke on the visitors that were like, you know, posing in front of it and Instagramming and like, you know, by like, you know, the Sphinx vulva in the back, you know, like. So I feel like there was a lot of maybe she was like making fun of, because she knew it was going to become this huge thing. And there were a lot of tourists. A lot of the majority of the people that went, from what I saw, were mainly European tourists.
Oh god.
Because it was in the summertime in July in New York, and you know they read about it in Time Out or whatever. You know. But
it's tough for me, like visually and like viscerally, I appreciate Kara Walker's work, and I think she is, Rosie, like you're saying, she's in on the joke as well.
Mm-hmm.
It does trouble me, though, it's kind of a catch-22, because she's in her work, she's playing with it. But for me, it's always troubling that hers is the work that is so, like, venerated by the larger world, and the larger art world, as, like, the paragon of, like, black art world. And it just so happens, it's kind of like this self-repeating thing that it happens to be about slavery, it's about old stuff, it's about like, it's this lane that white America is very comfortable with us making artwork about. And that's not her fault. Like, she shouldn't have to make work that she shouldn't have to make different work because of that. But it is, and I think she's in on the joke. But I wish, like, along with that sugar baby, that there was an artist who was thinking about something completely different, was also getting that level of like funding and financing and backing, and was kind of there to kind of show something else. Like, it shouldn't just be like one. Yeah, for me, yeah, it's always
not how it works.
Yeah, you're right. It's not how it works.
I'm sorry. Like, Creative Time is a nonprofit, but it's an institution.
Yeah.
And like, it works under an institutional model, a capitalist model. So of course they're going to get the biggest name they can to work at a large scale exhibition, you know?
But it's like, why is she the biggest name? Like, is she the most talented black artist alive? Like, right, so, you know, it's not like...
she has lots of prestige behind her name.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's also, you can question that.
She's controversial.
I mean, everybody.
Yeah.
She's unique.
I'm never being right or anything. I love her. But it is interesting that it's like,
accepted because of the imagery of white folks.
It's comfortable. It's comfortable. It's comfortable because it's uncomfortable. It's like, ooh, we're getting to kind of like reckon with our past and all this stuff. Whereas it's definitely not.
Okay, to play devil's advocate here. And this is something I've been thinking about. This is something I think about a lot, being someone who's a transplant here but has ancestry here. It's like the idea of memory and like remembering and recreating certain events, actions, cultural conflict issues. I see that in Kara with Sugar Baby. I see that with Beyonce, with Messy Maya, and all these different artists who were in that video. So I guess this is a question of like, how, as a black artist, like, how important is memory and like tying in that sense of history to your work, while at the same time, you know, managing that with like your values, like your marketability, your like need to make a living, like how does that play out for people?
Resources.
Because for me, it happens in lots of different ways, like depending on the medium. Like if I'm DJing, it might mean I'm just going to play something that I don't necessarily like, but I know people will dance to. if I really need that money, or if I don't care, I may just play disco all night and say, fuck it, it's what I want to hear.
I mean, I think that goes to like the skill of the artist. Like, I think we also live in an interesting world where like, once an artist becomes like at a certain echelon, they can no longer like make a bad piece. Like, yeah, we love Beyonce, but this isn't a great piece. Like, why is that not okay? Like, instead, it's like, oh, did Beyonce, like, is Beyonce a traitor? Did she, like, misquote this thing? Did she do this? Like, I think we should, like, kind of reclaim the idea that artists are always growing, they're always evolving, they make mistakes, they make things that aren't as good as the things they used to be. Whereas, like, if we have troubling things towards, like, Kara Walker, involved, and like to have that conversation instead of like Carol Walker. Is Carol Walker like a seller? Like, that's probably not the question. Like, I don't think Carol Walker is a seller. It's like, how is this really succeeding and failing just at a formal level? Like, I think we should talk more about that instead of like these more philosophical ideas. Like, you still have to make a piece of art, you still have to make a song. Like Kendrick is quoting old rappers and like classic things, but he might just be doing it at a better level than like somebody else is doing it at a not better level. So,
I do think though that in a greater society, you know, greater capitalistic white society in terms of artists and designers, there's a quota when it comes to people of color. We can celebrate two or three at a time, and that's it. You know what I mean? We have the black artist, and we have the black filmmaker, and we have the black dancer, and the black, you know, we can't, so, you know, so as artists, you have to decide, okay, is that my market? Is that where I want to be? Or am I making, am I gonna, you know, make my art? And maybe it's just accepted by my, you know, people at a, you know, another level of the black community who I, you know, or do I want to wait until my turn comes? Because there seems to be a quota. Their brains can only take, you know, Beyonce and, you know, their brains can only take Zoe Saldana and Halle Berry, you know, at a time. You know, they can only take Sidney Poitier and so-and-so. You know, they can't take five or six or seven. So as an artist, do I feel like I'm a success only when, you know, I get into the quota level? Or am I a success because I'm reaching the wider black community or people that, you know? Because that just seems the way things seem to work. And as an artist, I think you have to kind of deal with that. Because there might be somebody that's not Beyonce, you know, who's a really making really good music or really good art, and they might not be showing at MoMA or NOMA or whatever. They might be showing at the neighborhood gallery, but they consider themselves a success.
Do we want to end on one of these questions?
I guess we might have like 5 minutes left, maybe. I feel like...
Find a good one.
In 5 minutes, can we talk about
it? What about this one? What keeps you in New Orleans?
What keeps you here?
Are you from here? Like, okay. Why do you stay? I feel like this would be a good one for Rosemary. She's moving. She's
like, is she moving? She went back to New York?
Yeah, it's her job. I moved here a year ago on a whim, and I feel like I've really enjoyed my time here. I feel like the things I was looking for in the American city to move to were like a sense of place, a sense of culture, a sense of diversity, and that it was affordable. And the last one is why I came here and not other places. And I feel like I could go live in Portland, but I don't want to be the only black person in my, you know, my circle. So that's why I'm still here.
That's a good place to end.